You might get lost in the moment. Take it easy on your opponent. It plays on my mind. That's Waxahachie, who put on a tremendous show at Massey Hall last night. I'm Blake Murphy. This is Jays Talk Plus. Getting lost in the moment is about the only explanation for what Vladimir Guerrero Jr. did in the fifth inning on Tuesday. It was an error at first base, an absolute must-catch ball after Isaiah Kiner-Falefa makes a really nice play coming over from third base, making the throw against his momentum. Vlad just straight up drops it. It leads to a three-run rally for the Royals. Kevin Gausman doesn't get out of that inning. He got out of it eventually. He does not get out of that inning cleanly as he could have there. The Royals take that 3-2 lead from there, and that's enough to get it done. When you are not an elite team, you cannot afford to take it easy on your opponent. When you're the star player who's off to anything but a star start, it will surely play on your mind, at least until the next one. They will get another one tonight and another one tomorrow afternoon to try to make it 5 series victories in a row. But once again, a winnable game that slipped through their fingers, both because they couldn't really get anything going offensively. And look, we've seen the bats let down good starting pitching performances. In this case, it was a glove. It was Vladimir Guerrero Jr. Kevin Gausman's got to make that pitch to Bobby Witt Jr. that scored two, et cetera. Other guys in the lineup could do more damage, but it's hard not to sit with that fifth inning error from Vladimir Guerrero Jr. and wonder if this could have been, 10 of 14 for the Blue Jays. It's not. They lose 3-2 to help us sort through it. Keegan Matheson of MLB.com, of BlueJays.com. And Keegan, we got to ask you, first of all, you look tremendous. The hotel lighting there is unbelievable. You've got the hair done this early in the morning. Thank you. You're such a professional.
I tell you what, if the camera could only see what's going on to the left and right here, it might tell the truth about how I live my life. But it may look glamorous. We've got a beautiful ironing board up against the window here. This is as glamorous as it gets. TV is just as glamorous as it looks.
So look, you and I, we're the guys who cover the big controversial stuff, the fake hot dog numbers, things like that. We're the ones who are going to tell it like it is. The big controversy out of last night, not even Vladimir Guerrero Jr. We keep running into bark at the park opponents where dogs are in the stadium, dogs are in the broadcast booth, and our Toronto Blue Jays, my employers here at Sportsnet, we have not done one yet. What gives? What do we got to do?
Something needs to change. There were 499 dogs. I met every single one. I went around and introduced myself to all 499, and they were all very good. I'd like to report back. But, I feel like if we crack the dome open, if you guarantee it's a dome open night, you're risking rain. But we got to make it happen. They had a Lion King cam on, which for me is the best in-stadium thing. Miss me with the kiss cam. That makes me anxious. I don't know why. Yeah. I should probably unpack that. But the dog cam, it was a good time. There were 499 dogs and like 20 people at that game. It was as sleepy and strange a game as I've been at. Even the ball off the bat felt quiet. It was pretty sleepy. But dog day, I'm in favor of. I should probably say some positive things along the way. Dog days, good.
Yes, dog days at the park. The dog days of summer, we'll see how those go. Sleepy at the park yesterday. I don't want to say sleepy at first base, but we'll use that as a transition to the story of last night's game, which was Vladimir Guerrero Jr. Dropping a very, very catchable ball, a must-have ball if you're any sort of first baseman, let alone one who has won a Gold Glove recently. And, of course, you don't lose a 3-2 ball game all because of one play, but it's hard, especially when your star player is struggling at the plate. On a night, he goes 0-for-5 as well, grounds into a double play in the first inning. In the ninth inning, he grounds out with a runner. He grounds out in the ninth inning. He strikes out right after that error. I know he took accountability for it, and everyone's going to have an error or two over the course of the season, so I don't necessarily want to pile on. It's hard not to feel like not only was that the moment for the game and everything kind of, like you said, sleepy, it kind of got deflated from there. But also it is an interesting little snapshot of how things have gone for Vlad the first 24, 25 games here.
Yeah, the context of it all matters. If he was OPSing 950 and he had 9 home runs at this point, we say, okay, that's baseball. It sucked, but it's going to happen. Move on. It is a play that's going to happen. And when we asked Vladdy about it, there's not much he can say. It reminded me last year, Blake, of the one time Bo Bichette got thrown out at home. And I asked him why he went, and he said, because I thought I'd be safe. And I thought, okay, I'm the idiot here. I recognize that. And it's hard to ask Vladdy about that. We had to, and he said, I just dropped it. I missed it, period. I looked back in the replay. He didn't take his eyes off it. He wasn't texting as the ball was in the air or something. He just plain missed the ball. And it's the context of everything else, I think, that makes it matter at this point. The very next inning, Vladdy stepped up. And 3 years ago, Blake, if Vladdy had have made that play, when he came up the next inning, I'm thinking this ball is going to Jupiter right now. I don't think that anymore. When he came up in the ninth inning, I believe Springer was on first. He grounded out and moved Springer up. Again, I don't have that feeling of, oh, here he is. It's going to happen. I remember that 2021 season so vividly for that exact reason, because he felt inevitable. And it's that same feeling that you felt watching him come up through the minor leagues. It's a feeling you don't get about other hitters. And I haven't felt that in a long time. And with Guerrero, I know there's a lot of underlying numbers and other things that support this that look a little better than the numbers have been, but I live in reality, and when I'm covering games, they only put things on the scoreboard that actually happen. We're going on a few years of this now, yeah. And the talent is in there. Absolutely. We all know that. I don't think anybody in good faith can say that the talent's not there. It's obviously there, but it's the discourse is it is what it is. We've lost the middle. We have lost the middle of this completely. He is not the worst player in the world, but the part that also loses me is coming from the other side, from people who cover baseball or pretend to cover baseball, about trying to defend that this is okay. And it's not. Expectations matter. Vladdy was supposed to be a generational hitter because that's what he looked like. We didn't hold a secret media meeting and cook that one up. This is who he's supposed to be, and we haven't seen it in a long while.
Yeah, we haven't seen it in a bit. And you know, it's tough. And I had Chris Black on the show yesterday. We did a full segment kind of going through some of those, you know, hey, what is true in the criticism of Vlad? What isn't true? You know, what should we focus on, right? Like, I'm going to talk to Robert Orr in our second segment today, who has created damage rate. He's a guy who's taken, basically, he doesn't call it this, but I think it's the Vlad stat, which is, you know, hey, exit velocity alone doesn't tell us enough. Launch angle alone doesn't tell us enough. But hey, what is your exit velocity and launch angle and direction on the same hit? So you're not looking at 117 mile an hour ground ball and a 50 mile an hour fly ball and being like, well, look at the fly ball rate and look at the exit velocity. So we'll get into some of that. But this is year three now of the underperforming relative to what some of those expected stats would say, and some of those expected stats, not all of them, kind of declining as well year over year in terms of, you know, how much damage we would actually expect Vlad to do. So that conversation yesterday with Chris Black was a little bit of extra context of, hey, what is actually going on and worth focusing on, and what is, you know, noise, or what is, to your point, someone who's gone the other end and is not coming back. So hopefully that provided some middle ground for that. For right now, though, that conversation is about what do we expect to happen from here. And what has happened so far this season is that Vlad is hitting .217. He has a .681 OPS. Somehow that is like right around league average OPS, which is driving me insane. The fact that we're looking at .681 and being like, oh, he's having an average year at the dish. I'm going to lose my mind about a sub 700 OPS league environment. But yeah, so anyway, I just say that to try to reiterate the context of talking about what we expect Vlad to do from here because of X, Y, and Z is different than talking about he has hit .217 so far this season and made a big error in a big spot last night.
Absolutely. The numbers are so down. And I mean, I want a league where everyone's OPSing 900. That's more fun. That's just more fun.
It's AAA, by the way. That's just AAA right now.
Yeah, that is AAA. Let me introduce you all to the International League, where I think I could OPS 681. It's a good place to be. But it's we're really reaching the point on Vladdy, like you say, Blake, where, I mean, sorry, we've reached this point a long time ago, but we're getting deeper into the point where you need to see it. You need to see it happening on the field. And these numbers can be encouraging. And those are the reasons. I don't use those as my leading reasons. I use those as reasons to not give up on the guy. I still think you're foolish if you do. You know, Vladdy is still young. That talent is still in there. We've seen what he's capable of. When you look at those numbers, that keeps you engaged. That keeps you there. But we've got to see it. And Vladdy is a player who last night, you know, we haven't seen that from him in a long time. Vladdy has great ball skills around the bag. He has great footwork around the bag. For a big guy, very good footwork. It's just an error that landed at the wrong time. Bad timing in a game where he was 0 for 5. In a week where even before the game, I'm asking John Schneider about Vladdy at the plate. And then that happens. It's the timing of it all. Not pretty. We all know with Vladdy that can change quickly.
Yeah.
And for all of the criticism on Vladdy, if he goes 3 for 5 with a home run tonight, I will write every single word about that happily. I will heap praise on this guy because it's about telling the story that happens in front of you. Unfortunately, the story that's been happening in front of me covering games lately has been on the other side of things for Vladdy. We just haven't seen that energy, that talent recently, like I mentioned off the top, Blake, that brings you back to 2021, where when he comes to the plate, you're thinking, oh, okay, it's about to happen. You don't get that anymore right now. That's what great hitters do. It's been a minute.
It has been a minute. And as you said last night, as you tweeted out your article on BlueJays.com, which went into a lot of this stuff in more detail with some good quotes from Kevin Gausman and John Schneider, you said the Blue Jays need their star back. This is a team that's 10-1 when they score 5 or more runs. And that's an oversimplification. But the other part of being 10-1 when you score 5 or more runs is that you've only done it 11 times in 24 games here, right? Like you can, and look, offensive environment is down. We just covered that. But this is a team that could use their star back because they don't have, you know, the power through the lineup. They don't have the ability to put up big crooked numbers inning after inning when Vladimir Guerrero Jr. is not going as he can go, when Bo Bichette's not going as Bo Bichette can go. Thankfully, there's been a Dalton Varsho in all of this, another extra base hit last night. Before we pivot to that, the Vladimir Guerrero Jr. error also kind of costs Kevin Gausman what was a pretty good outing, but a very unconventional Kevin Gausman outing here. He only had 4 swing and miss the entire game, only 1 through the first 3 innings. And this was the, both in terms of called strikes and whiffs, the lowest called strike and swinging strike rate he has had in a start as a Blue Jay. Some of that owes to the Kansas City Royals approach. I know you guys talked to Gausman about it after the game, and no one is going to argue with 6 2/3 with 0 earned runs. You can argue with, you know, the execution against Bobby Witt Jr. there after the error. But what was Gausman's feel about, yeah, like a really pitch to contact outing by his standards?
Yeah. I think Kevin Gausman is able to shapeshift and adapt even more than I understood. I didn't even have that good of a feel for that because we've always seen fastball splitter. Kevin Gausman's going to punch you in the mouth and do what he does. But now we are seeing from time to time, it's typically when Gausman doesn't have his best velocity. Last night it was there. It was okay. But he recognized that the Royals were trying to get him early. Let's take some risks early so that we don't let this guy get to 2 strikes, because if we do, he's going to strike us out. So Gausman, I think, very quickly adapted to that. He had seen what happened the night prior with Yusei Kikuchi, where they were jumping on him early. That's why Kikuchi's pitch count stayed down where it did. And I think Gausman made a very good pivot kind of in the moments. And that shows you what a true pitcher he is. He's not just a guy that is trained to bullet a fastball at you and rip off a splitter. He's a guy who can feel out a game and certainly deserved a better outcome, deserved a win there. We still have not seen the classic Kevin Gausman. We still haven't seen that 7 innings, 11 strikeouts, absolutely dominant outing. I think he's getting there. You know, he talked a lot about timing last night, and I asked him what that means. And he involves that little leg kick, the foot tap. There are a lot of things happening. It's a dance for Kevin Gausman, and he's getting there to the point where he's going to get that consistent release point. He's going to get that splitter down where he wants it. He's almost there. I really think he's almost there. Maybe it's that next outing where he really dominates. But that's impressive to see a guy who can do it the different way. A lot of pitchers in Major League Baseball, if plan A doesn't work, they just kind of cling to the life raft and try to get through 5 innings. Kevin Gausman pivoted a bit, saved the bullpen, importantly, in front of a Yariel Rodriguez start today. So a different version of looking like an ace, but really impressive from Gausman, both before and after the game. Even talking about Vladdy and the error, I think you just saw who Gausman is as a pitcher, and a very, very impressive one.
Yeah, we always talk about it from the hitting standpoint, right? Of taking what a pitcher's offering you, or, you know, hey, take what the defense gives you in other sports. But sometimes as a pitcher, yeah, you can adjust to that as well. And Gausman's been a guy who, you know, as primarily a two-pitch pitcher, teams have tried different stuff. The Minnesota Twins were like, we're going to lay off everything and we're not going to swing at anything. The Yankees tried to do that as well, and the Yankees really haven't swung at much from Gausman compared to other teams, and he's able to figure that out and give them a good start. This month as a whole is the lowest fastball usage of his entire time with the Blue Jays in any month. So it's actually been, you know, hey, I'm going to lean on the splitter even more than maybe we're used to, a little bit of that slider as well. Here's one for you about Gausman maybe figuring out different ways. There is a chance this is just the pitch tracking picking up something that's not there when he throws his four-seamer a certain way. But StatCast had him at throwing 6 2-seamers, so sinkers, last night. And there was one other start earlier this year where they tabbed him as having a sinker as well. Has this come up at all? Have you noticed anything? Or is this, you know, maybe there's just some noise here, like when he, you know, debuted the sweeper last year and then went away from it almost immediately?
Right. It hasn't come up with guys, but I noticed that last night on the StatCast reading. So I'll have to talk to our people at MLB who are a little smarter than me. There's a few of them, I promise you. But I would love to see that incorporated for Gausman. I don't think he's a guy who needs to tinker too much. Those could be maybe some slower fastballs that are getting some tail. Hasn't come up with him, but I'm interested in it, though. Anything that can get hitters off that splitter. For Gausman, it's always about the four-seamer, all about the four-seamer getting to that splitter. But I think he's getting there.
So the splitter he throws to Bobby Witt Jr., and we'll use this to kind of hey, Bobby Witt Jr. hit that splitter stayed up in the zone. Normally we'd see, you know, if that's Kevin Gausman's best splitter, it's ducking down below the zone and maybe he can't do much with it. You've got to see Bobby Witt Jr. up close a couple games in a row here, and you get a couple more. Man, how special is that kid? I mean, right now, but also he's going to be an absolute superstar in this league, right?
He's fantastic. He is amazing to watch. He's on that short list of players that I actually look forward to watching. And that's tough in baseball. You know, how long before at-bats last? A couple minutes? You know, you're not seeing a guy on the floor as long as you would in an NBA, an NFL game, anything like that. Bobby Witt is worth watching. He's such an exciting young player, and he does it in every phase of the game. Has some great plays on defense. Running the bases, he's a guy who can steal 40 bags a year. The Royals are an exciting team. They really are. Like, if you decided to be a baseball fan today, you're probably going for the Orioles. That would be a cool team to jump onto. But the Royals are a pretty cool team to get in on the ground floor of, especially if they keep spending some money. I hope they do. I like it when any team spends money. It makes baseball better. But the Royals, with their farm system, guys they've developed, and you need stars. You just need star players. Bobby Witt is exactly that. I forget where I had him on my MVP ballot last year, but I think I might have been a spot or two above consensus. I think I was a bit aggressive with Bobby Witt, and I think he's probably going to win one of those someday. Like, he's that type of player who's always going to have a very good baseline, but when he has a peak season, if his batting average spikes, if he steals 60 bags, gets some power, like, he'll be an MVP some year. I really think he will be.
Yeah, and I mean, you do all that while playing a really good shortstop. Things are going to fall into place. And yeah, you're right. That's an exciting young team. You know, a couple of young, exciting guys around the diamond. Pasquantino, who has just an unbelievable approach. Melendez, who thankfully now that they've got him out from behind the plate, we can appreciate the offense for what it is. There are a lot of fun guys there and a couple of interesting pitchers. And you're right. If you could jump on the Orioles, but now that they've won 100 games, like, you're kind of maybe you want to find the next Orioles. And there are two other things the Royals have going for them. And one is they play at one of the most beautiful parks in baseball. So you get that aspect of it as well. Aesthetically, they are a good team to cheer for. And you're in the AL Central. So the path to sustained success is not too tough there. Want to hit on a positive from the Blue Jays side from last night. Dalton Varsho, another extra base hit, steals his third base of the season as well. He has 10 extra base hits in his last 10 starts. Stat from our pal Chris Black. Only Davis Schneider and Matt Chapman had a stretch like that last season, 10 extra base hits over the course of 10 starts. He's also just coming off of a 6-home-run-in-9-game stretch where nobody did that on the Blue Jays at all last year. So this is about as hot a hitter as we've seen the last couple seasons with the Blue Jays. What are you seeing from Dalton Varsho during this really sustained hot stretch now?
Confidence. Honestly, this is confidence in Varsho. I think Yusei Kikuchi is the best example of confidence from a pitcher, what it actually looks like visually, where you can look and see it. Varsho is the example of a hitter, where you can really see what it does for him at the plate. Yeah, there have been some minor adjustments, some tinkering in the swing, but you're seeing Dalton Varsho playing baseball without the weight of the world on his shoulders right now, I think. You're seeing him getting away from those expectations of the trade and everything else and be a little more free, I think. Now, Dalton's always going to be the work hard, serious baseball player. He's not the guy dancing around in pregame that I typically see, but is a guy who works extremely hard. Yusei talked about this, actually, and a lot of the players have, of even the work he's doing on the team plane. He's there early. He stays late. He's the ultimate kind of, you know, coach's kid, son of a former big leaguer like we've seen over and over here in Toronto. Also a man of fine taste, a Green Bay Packers fan, so he's got that going for him. He's got the intangibles. But when Dalton is playing like this, what a player. What a player when he is playing to this level. I'd love to see him running more. I love Dalton on the bases when he is being aggressive. Last year, he just wasn't on base enough to really make that happen. But I think he's a guy who can round out his value with those 20, 25 stolen bases pretty easily. And we all know he's one of the best defensive outfielders in the entire sport. Maybe he's at center field a bit more now. We'll see how Kevin Kiermaier and his left hip is doing today. But the Blue Jays need these individual performances, whether it's from Vladdy, it could be as early as tonight. Lately, it's been Dalton Varsho. If your entire offense is not going to string together six runs, that mythical number at this point for Toronto, you need one or two guys a night to do something big. Lately, that's been Dalton Varsho. And there's a reason his teammates love him. You know, what I think about a guy doesn't matter. But when I see his teammates really like a guy, that matters. When I see that a guy's really earned the clubhouse and grabbed them, Varsho is kind of like everybody's little brother in there. And I don't mean that in the hierarchical big to little brother way, but just in the way that everyone cares about him and wants to see him succeed, it's palpable. You really feel it, and people love the guy for a reason.
Yeah, it's been fun to see. And yeah, the most popular guy in the dugout, if you look in during, while the Jays are at the plate, and then in the clubhouse pregame, on the field pregame, things like that. If you want more on Dalton Varsho, talk to Gary Varsho yesterday, filling in on Blair and Barker. So that was a great chat as well. Tonight, the Jays will try to get back on the winning side, and our guy Yariel Rodriguez is on the mound. We were excited about this guy when the Jays signed him. I know you really enjoyed the Yariel experience in spring training, getting to talk to him and see him work and things like that. Now we've got two major league starts to see what this looks like. What have you learned about Yariel Rodriguez these first two times out?
He is a beautiful match of personality and pitching together when it works the same way. I remember hearing about this from so many Blue Jays people that he has some fire. He's going to be a guy that other fan bases might not love down the road. I still remember that first scrum that he did in Dunedin, Blake, when he walked out and had his head down, cap tipped a bit, and I asked him a question, and he shot up and looked at me with those eyes. And I said, oh, my God. It's an intimidating presence. He really is. Everything about him on the mound is intimidating and intense. That's how he described himself the first time he talked to us. He said, I'm intense. I'm very intense. I'm very intense on the mound. And it works. It all works. If you're like that and you have a 7 ERA, I don't know. But the entire package works for Rodriguez, and it's so fun to watch. Fun to watch from a hardcore baseball standpoint, but I also try to remember that 95% of people watching the game are my mom. It's your buddy from out east. He's fun to watch. And from a baseball standpoint, I think Yariel gives the Blue Jays so many options at this point. I'd like to see them, and I think they will, let him run with this starter's job a bit longer. You're not going to start micromanaging now. You're not going to ramp him up, then ramp him down this quickly. But down the road, this is a guy who could be pitching 2-3 inning stints down the stretch. You could shorten him up if you have injuries in the back of the bullpen. You could do so many things. And it's not versatility just for the sake of versatility. It's versatility because he can do each of those things really well. That's where it gets exciting for the Blue Jays. At the time, he was my favorite signing of the offseason just because there was upside. But now that I've seen it, love the deal, really like the pitcher.
Yeah. Also, I mean, look, I like it as well and really like seeing him and like the deal at the time. Not exactly the most hotly contested category, though, best signing of the offseason for the Blue Jays. So,
yeah, that's true. That's
bar
true.
A little low there. Okay, we'll use this. I want to throw a couple quick minor league things at you. I know you're always keeping an eye on the Blue Jays farm system. You mentioned potentially down the line, Yariel Rodriguez is role changing, something that would allow that to happen potentially a couple weeks, a couple months from now, if Alek Manoah is back to being a major league capable starter. He will start at AAA Buffalo again tonight. I know you and I kind of caught at least chunks of his last two AAA starts. Not to John Schneider it necessarily, but what are you looking for beyond just, hey, he walked zero guys and allowed two earned runs?
He looked a lot better last time. He really did. Similar to the Vladdy conversation, Blake. If it looks bad, I'll say it looks bad. But when it starts looking better, no problem. And Manoah did look a lot better last time. A tough first inning. But then he started to look a little bit more like his old self. Now we need to see a lot more of that. But he was locating his fastball. You saw a bit of the aggression. And his breaking ball, he missed a couple of bats with that slider that looked like the old him. It was that wow moment. So getting in inside on the left-handed hitter, breaking it outside on the right-handers, it was really impressive from Manoah. That was the first time in this rehab process, going back to single A and a couple triple A's, where I looked and saw, okay, this is the path. Keep following this. Like, this is the way back for Manoah. We've seen it now. So this is an important one. He is up to a full workload now. He is, for our intents and purposes, healthy. That's out of the way at this point. Right now, he is a pitcher in AAA trying to make the big leagues. Yeah, he's got some rehab time left on that assignment, but he's competing to make it up to the big leagues. And the Blue Jays have lost Mitch White. Ricky Tiedemann has an injury and is meeting with doctors, which does not sound good. So at this point, Manoah is who you are leaning on as that rotation depth. And if he can provide that as a number six, maybe soon a number five, that's huge. That really saves you because the Blue Jays have walked on some thin ice these last few years with rotation depth. But if Manoah can be that, fantastic. And I finally think that he is on the right path. I saw a bit of that in his last outing. Really interested to see this one because he finally seemed like he found that.
On the hitter side, it sounds like Kevin Kiermaier's hip flexor issue is a day-to-day thing. Let's say it wasn't. I'm sure you've been getting lots of questions about what would have to happen for Aurelvis Martinez or Addison Barger to get the call. Will Robertson is a name I'll throw in there as well. He's banged up right now, yeah. But if you want another outfielder who can, you know, play capably outfield, he's left-handed hitter, so that's probably why he wouldn't be in the mix in the interim. Would we get to see any of that, or is the Nathan Lucas is on the 40-man and they don't mind him not playing a lot as the spare part? How would you see that shaking out? Is there any path to Blue Jays fans getting to see one of these prospects in the short term?
It's close. It's right there. Now, we have seen the Nathan Lucas not playing role before. Nathan Lucas's role in this organization fascinates me because I've heard people say 1,000 times, he's a big leaguer. He can help us. And I do believe that. He's having a nice year down in AAA as well. But it seems like there's just not that path. You know, I feel like he's the classic example of if he ever got exposed to waivers and could go play every day for the A's or something, like that's a real path. But if the Blue Jays need something just real short term, Lucas does fit that. He's on the 40 man. That makes it easy. But at this point, the Blue Jays' versatility on their roster, we're talking about Biggio, Schneider, Clement, these types of guys, you don't necessarily need to be an outfielder in this. Aurelvis Martinez is awfully close. He's playing as well as anybody really in the system right now. Addison Barger's right there. He can play that right field for you. I don't know what that would mean with a Springer situation there. And he's off to a fantastic start. He's showing a better plate approach than I expected from him. He's looked really good. And he's starting to hit the ball to fields that are not within an inch of the right field foul pole. Like, he is a dead pole hitter, both in practice and just the entire energy of him. You could meet him for 5 seconds and you'd say, okay, you pulled a bit of baseball. I get it. But there's a lot of options. This is where the Blue Jays have some choices to make. Even if Spencer Horwitz is on base like 900 at this point, it's ridiculous in AAA. So a good problem for the Blue Jays. And I do think we're getting to the point where a Barger, maybe even in front of a Martinez, not long-term, but right now, given positional versatility, could be beginning pretty close to being an option here, which is exciting.
Always a good reason to check out Bison's baseball. They're also they're accepting Canadian money at par until I believe the end of May. Ooh. At least that's one of the promotional things they're doing right now. So get down there, guys. Get a Manoah start in. Get to see some of these guys. You are not in Buffalo. You're in KC. I got to let you go. It's almost lunchtime. I assume barbecue's on the menu.
You know what? I'm trying not to this time. I can still think, even thinking of it, I can feel the heartburn I got last time. I'm softening with old age, but I'll wander around this extremely empty city and find something here soon. It's really just, you know, Paris of the Midwest.
All right, man. Thank you so much for taking the time out. Appreciate it, buddy.
You got it, Blake.
Keegan Mathieson of MLB.com, of BlueJays.com. Absolute gem, even if every person I've talked to this week is not taking advantage of the barbecue in Kansas City. What's going on? Dan Schulman's not doing it. Ben Nicholson-Smith's not doing it. Keegan Mathieson's not doing it. You need to send me down there. Someone's got to put a dent in those KC barbecue joints. We're going to take a break. On the other side, we're going to talk to one of our favorite guests, Robert Orr of Baseball Prospectus, who we now have to introduce as award winner. Robert Orr, we'll tell you more about that, the research that won him a Sabre Award, and how it pertains to a couple of Blue Jays, and maybe hints at better things ahead for some Blue Jays, and certainly makes the case that Davis Schneider is here with some of the newer, more advanced analysis that we have available to us. Robert Orr joins us next as Jays Talk Plus continues on the Sportsnet Radio Network and Sportsnet 360.
Hey, it's Ailish Forafar.
And I'm Justin Cuthbert.
Join us as we discuss the most important sports stories of the day and tee up the biggest games of the night.
It's the Fan Pregame, 6 p.m. weekdays on Sportsnet, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Jays Talk Plus. Thanks, as always, to Lance Kennedy and Jennifer Rolnick and Amit Mann behind the glass here. But I forgot to send Lance the music cues for today, and he nailed it anyway. Lance is the best. Also the best, Robert Orr of Baseball Prospectus of FTN Fantasy. 2024 Sabre Award winner and big fan of just every Eastern Conference basketball team. Robert, what's up, man? Thanks for taking the time out.
Thanks for having me on. How are you?
I'm good, man. So this Royals piece that you wrote last week, and I do want to talk about some of your Sabre award-winning research, but you write this piece last week. The Royals are hitting like kings, you know, iffy title, great article, and it's well-timed as the Jays are going to face the Royals here. So the key part of this is not only are the Royals off to a nice start at the plate, and it's not just fueled by entirely playing the Chicago White Sox, but also a lot of their guys individually got started on this work late last season. When we, you know, bigger picture, how helpful can that stuff be? Because, you know, the history of baseball, when rosters could expand to 40 players in September, we got a lot of junk data late in seasons in the past. Now that that's not really the case, how helpful are we finding these kind of late season indicators that, hey, maybe better days are ahead for a player, for a team?
I haven't looked into it like statistically to see if there's a lot there, but I think just for a little bit of analysis, I like seeing if guys made changes, and particularly younger players like a lot of the Royals. I like seeing if they did something different at the end of the year and then seeing if that carries over. And if it does, then I tend to think that's kind of meaningful. So it's always giving something to look for.
Yeah, it's good. And you know, it's always helpful to look. We're dealing with very small sample sizes right now, right? So it's like, okay, well, if this guy's doing it in 50 plate appearances, what does that mean? Well, oh, he was also doing it in 30, 40 plate appearances to close last year. That's helpful. So with this Royals group, we're starting to see it. They haven't, you know, they haven't hit the Jays a ton in this series, even though it's 1-1, but the Jays are one of the best pitching teams in all of baseball. What is the upside of this young group offensively?
I think they could be one of, they could be one of like a handful of the best lineups in the AL. They have really good contact quality. Like they, like Bobby Witt is obviously a superstar. You could argue he's like the best player in baseball right now. I don't know, maybe. But like they have a bunch of guys like MJ Melendez, I like a lot. Nelson Velasquez can hammer the ball. Salvador Perez is like having this weird resurgence out of nowhere at his age. I think they can put up runs with the best of them on their day, I think. And I kind of expect them to keep up their run at the AL Central.
Yeah, it's not the stiffest of competition there. So if you can do a couple things right, you're in pretty good shape there. And you mentioned it. This is not only the Bobby Witt Jr. show. There's some depth here. They have six regulars who are in the 75th percentile or higher in exit velocity. And I know Blue Jays fans don't love hearing about exit velocity because there's a certain superstar who has great exit velocities and not great results the last little while. But for comparison's sake, the Blue Jays only have two of those guys. The Royals have six. It's Vladimir Guerrero Jr. and David Schneider on the Blue Jays side. The Royals have six guys in that top kind of quarter of the league for hitting the ball hard. You mentioned Nelson Velasquez. Want to ask a little bit more about him. He obviously has a reputation as a guy who can hit the ball a mile. But we've seen early on this year a significantly improved approach. When you see a guy who's doing that, and again, it's a small window here to start the season, but a guy who's always had the power tool and is now starting to refine his approach, you know, I think of him specifically from like a fantasy baseball perspective. I know you're very good at fantasy baseball as well. You know, kind of a maybe like a real power producer here lying in wait.
Yeah, I agree. And he's got like the big swing and miss in his game. I think that's always going to be there. So that kind of makes his approach more important. Because if you're gonna swing and miss a lot, you need to make sure that the ones you're making contact on are good pitches to hit. And he's done that in the early going. And I think he did that at the end of last year too. After the trade deadline, he hit like 10 or 12 home runs or something with the Royals in just a 2 month span. So it's encouraging to see that carry over. I kind of think he's a little bit of a Christopher Morel type, where the contact quality is just really great. But yeah, he's just because of how hard and violently he swings, there's always going to be some swing and miss there.
Yeah, and look, that's okay. You can do that. You know, I mentioned David Schneider on the Blue Jays side. There's going to be some swing and miss there, but you know, you improve the approach. The batted ball quality is very, very high. You know what you can hit and what you can't hit, and that's kind of, you know, that selective aggression is kind of at the heart of Seager, which is a stat that you came up with. It's what, you know, your work on Seager is what won you the 2024 Sabre Award for Contemporary Baseball Analysis. I've referenced it on the show here. The acronym is like quirky, you know, Seager, obviously, because Seager has this really, really good approach. But in terms of being able to try to capture what we want out of guys, you know, not being too selective, being selectively aggressive and jumping on the right pitches, why is that important? And for anyone who hasn't, you know, heard you explain it yet, what is Seager? What is Seager measuring?
Okay, so first things first, I didn't come up with the name, and I heard you rag on the title of the Royals piece last week. I don't do the titles either.
I know. So I write too. I know we don't do our own titles.
I just wanted to clear my name there. And I didn't come up with the Seager acronym either. But yeah, it's trying to measure selective aggression, which a lot goes into that. And I've come to think of it kind of as like a marker for a guy's pitch recognition too. Which is obviously an important skill. And it's kind of hard to measure. You have things like chase rate and end zone swing rate, which pitch recognition goes into, but those are kind of like byproducts of it. So this gets a little bit closer to measuring the actual skill. And it boils down to like good takes minus bad takes, basically, where you have like selection, where it's just like how many of the decisions you make are good takes, and then the hittable pitches taken, which is the other part of it, is like how many are you watching go by that you shouldn't be. The Royals rate quite well in that this year. Witt and Velasquez are really high up there. That's just what it boils down to. It correlates pretty well with like with slugging ability, which is what I was after, because like chase rate doesn't really let you know if a guy is swinging at pitches he should in the zone. And that's really what I was trying to get after, because that's like the Corey Seager thing, which is why they came up with Seager as the title.
Look, I like Seager as the title for this one. I'm all for it. You know, on the basketball side, we have Darko as an acronym. I'm here for that. I don't mind that at all. This is a question, and maybe it's not something Seager captures. It's too individual. But when we talk about being selective and cutting down your chase rate and things like that, you see a guy like Nick Castellanos, who only has one extra base hit this year, and he's trimmed the chase rate, but he's not doing damage on really anything. Is there a point at which a guy can, you know, be too selective, get too outside of himself, you know, in the, I'm not saying Castellanos is chasing, you know, Seager or trying to cut the chase rate only. I'm sure he's just trying to have good at bats. But is there a risk to for some guys of going too far the other way with it?
Oh yeah. Actually a different Philly was the best example of that last year. Bryson Stott, he had a pretty decent sophomore season, but Seager said he was watching way too many pitches. And he went into last year talking about how he was going to try to lay off of high fastballs because they give him so much trouble as a rookie. But he didn't hit for a ton of power last year, not as much as he probably could have. And I think that was partly a result of watching a lot of fastballs in the zone. There's definitely like some give and take there. Castellanos, like after the NLCS last year, everyone was talking about how the Phillies chased too much. I wrote about that. It was a little frustrating to watch as a Phillies fan. He's chasing a lot less this year, but he's also like he's watching a lot of pitches go by that he used to hammer, you know, for doubles in the gap or home runs, because he hits sliders at the bottom of the zone. That's where his power is, and when he's focused on not chasing the ones out of the zone, it's hard to tell. You know, pitching is pretty good. It's hard to tell which ones are going to in and out of the zone. So yeah, he's watching a lot of pitches that he used to crush go by. So there's definitely some trade-offs there.
Yeah, it's a tough one. So on the, I want to swing to the Blue Jays side here. So again, Seager is this measure of selective aggression. Are you jumping on the right pitches? Are you laying off the right pitches? Things like that. We see right now, if we look at the Blue Jays leaderboard, George Springer is at the top of it. And I know that the actual number maybe doesn't mean anything to anyone, but 29.4, that number there for George Springer, that ranks third in all of baseball so far in this kind of selective aggression metric. Now, George Springer hasn't had the results yet. He did have three hits last night, which is maybe a move in the right direction. But this is significantly higher than Springer has had in the past. When it comes to a stat like this, and we're only a month into the season, not even really, how quickly do we accept that these kind of changes are real? Hey, George Springer has fundamentally improved what he is and isn't swinging at.
Yeah, so I've been looking at how quickly it stabilizes and stuff, and I haven't really compared it to a guy's career averages, so I'm not sure how quickly you would believe those changes. But it the season, it stabilizes, you know, about 80 to 90 plate appearances in.
Okay.
Is when you can start being like, okay, this is differing significantly from the rest of the league, then that's something you should start paying attention to. I'm not sure how many plate appearances Springer has already, but probably getting towards that number, and you know, it's a big change, and I would be encouraged by that, honestly, because it seems like good process going into his decisions. I know his power's kind of dipped this year. He's not, I mean, I think the upper end exit velocities are a little bit lower this year. So you might be, it's like a physical decline. He has to make up for it with what he's doing at the plate. So the fact that he is doing the right things is something that would be encouraging for that.
Also encouraging, and yeah, the bat speed's down a little bit with George Springer, as we, you know, as we expect when a guy is 34. Trying to jump a little earlier. We saw him jump on a couple of fastballs yesterday, and then Michael Wacha had to go change up to get him out after a couple, which Michael Wacha is wont to do. Another Jay who there are a lot of encouraging signs when we look at both this selective aggression metric that you have, Seager, and then also damage rate, which I talk about damage rate a lot on the show, because I know sometimes people grow tired of, well, exit velocity, what does that mean if a guy is exit velocitying right to the shortstop, right to the third baseman? What does launch angle mean if you're, you know, there's not enough behind it? Well, what if it's, you know, are you pulling it right down the line? That means a different thing than if you're trying to hit it to a right center field power alley. So you have this stat called damage rate, which kind of tries to put each of these things together, looks at each individual batted ball, and it doesn't say, hey, yeah, you average 98 miles an hour exit velocity in this launch angle. It's like, well, no, you hit this ball this hard at this angle to this part of the park, and then treat the next one, and we see what kind of damage we'd expect guys to do. Davis Schneider is someone who ranks really high on both of these. Davis Schneider is 18th in the league in damage rate right now. He's just ahead of Bobby Witt Jr. He is tops on the Blue Jays by a good margin. Davis Schneider is a guy who, you know, two small samples chopped up here. He hasn't been an everyday guy this year, wasn't an everyday guy last year. But have you seen enough in the underlying stuff to think, yeah, Davis Schneider should probably be in that lineup most days?
Yeah, definitely. He put up very similar underlying numbers last year when he came up. And I know the big concern there is there's some swing and miss with him too, kind of as a product of his approach, because he like pulls everything in the air. So there's going to be some swing and miss when you have to get out in front of the plate. But I've definitely seen enough where I'm like, yeah, this guy should probably be, if not like an everyday player, then like a 5 or 6 days a week player. See what he can do, because everything says that he's got a great approach. He can ID the right pitches, and he's trying to do the best thing that you can do, which is hit the ball in the air very hard. And he appears to be quite good at it. So in a lineup where some other guys might not be carrying the weight you expected them to, I think Davis Schneider could definitely provide a jolt to the offense if he was to get an extended run.
Yeah, we've done enough Vlad on the show the last 2 days, so we won't get into his steady decline in damage rate over the last couple of years. The other thing that stands out from looking at these leaderboards is we got to put a governor on the Orioles. Like they can't just keep doing this. They can't just keep bringing new guys up who just hit the heck out of the baseball. It really is unfair. Robert, before I let you go here, in addition to the 2024 Sabre Award for Contemporary Baseball Analysis, you also won the 2023 NFBC Gladiator overall winner, which is a fantasy baseball thing. And I'm not asking for fantasy baseball advice, but I do have to wonder, like, calling the fantasy, like, the grand champion of fantasy baseball the Gladiator winner, is this like, I know I did the Royals article title that laughed at Seager. I like that one. We're calling the fantasy grand champion the Gladiator Award. You know, I guess with that one, what are we doing, man? We're trying to disguise a very nerdy endeavor here as a very like battlefront term there. Congrats, by the way.
Oh, thanks. Sounds a lot cooler than it is, doesn't it? I think they named it that because it's you just draft like a bunch of guys at the start of the year just to fill out a lineup, and then you can't do anything else.
Right.
You lose players to injury. That's it. So, you know, Gladiator, it's like last man standing kind of thing. But yeah, I don't know. They have some good publicists who come up with the names of those contests.
Yeah, that's it's a fun thing. I did not do so weirdly, like, because of certain laws and restrictions and stuff like that, and the same stuff that comes up in sports gambling, I live in a part of Canada where I can't play in those. So even though I'm a big fantasy baseball guy, I've got to find like the cash games where you're like PayPaling the money around, because we're not allowed to play for pay fantasy games here. So, you know, you have a chance to defend your title until Ontario changes their laws. And then I'm coming for you, and I'm using Seager and damage rate against you. I'm in a league with Eno Saris, and I'm like, I know your stuff plus. I know who you're trying to draft. I'm coming after you. I'm going to do the same to you, man.
Looking forward to it.
Robert, thanks so much for taking the time out, man. Keep up all the great work.
Thank you so much.
Robert Orr of Baseball Prospectus, 2024 Sabre Award winner. You can follow him on Twitter at NotTheBobbyOrr, because he's not that Bobby Orr. He is a different Robert Orr. Really, really great writer. Love having him on the show. Just a fantastically smart guy. And, you know, the damage rate, Seager, I don't know. Seager, it'll take some getting used to. What are we actually measuring with this selective aggression and things like that? But it boiling down to, well, how often is a guy jumping on a pitch that he should and laying off a pitch that he shouldn't jump on and letting a bad one go by, et cetera. So that's really helpful. And then it's also very helpful to have something like damage rate, which takes all these different, all these different batted ball things that we hear about and kind of chunks them into one thing. We have a little bit of news here per Johnny Junta of Gate 14. Addison Barger is going to be getting called up. Now we'll see if that's a Kevin Kiermaier IL move. We'll see, you know, what the timing on that is, what that looks like. But Johnny has had a really good finger on the pulse of Bisons getting the call up in the past. So yeah, keep an eye out for that later, whether that means a Kevin Kiermaier IL stint or something else. But it's out there that Addison Barger could be joining the Toronto Blue Jays. If he does, he'll be joining them as they take on Alec Marsh. It's a 7:40 start against tonight. It's Yariel Rodriguez night, which is always a lot of fun. Alec Marsh, another one of these younger Royals pitchers. You know, hey, he almost broke Brady Singer's record right before him in terms of fastest to 100 strikeouts as a Kansas City Royal. Almost said Baltimore Oriole. This should be a lot of fun. He throws 94, 95, so a little harder than we've seen the last couple of games. Jeff Merrick Show is coming up for you next. Blair and Barker with you as usual, 2-4 and post game. Leafs tonight, by the way, and with the Jays having an afternoon game tomorrow and Leafs game tonight, we're not on tomorrow, so I'll talk to you Friday at 11 o'clock. Make sure after the Leaf game, by the way, you check out JD Bunkus's post game YouTube streams. They're really, really, really good as a Leaf fan. See ya.